following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times. Dates, times, and events mentioned in the following program have already occurred and are no longer relevant. Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
Andy Wawo looks a scream, and him on my woe. Andy Wawo, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sarah Kate Nomura. She's the Assistant Director of Exhibitions at the Portland Japanese Garden, and she's here talking about fashion and fantasy, the art of Netsuke carvings. Thanks very much for coming on Art Focus, Sarah Kate.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to chat with you.
This exhibition is lots and lots, 70 in fact, tiny little carved objects. You know, Japanese are really into miniaturization, and they totally nailed it, you know, in the Edo period. So they made these netsuke, which is a particular craft with a particular use. Just tell us what a netsuke is.
Yeah, so it is a tiny carving. It's actually small enough to fit in the palm of your hand. And they were used as a really functional object in Edo-era Japan to help secure small items to your obi sash. So the men's kimono didn't have pockets. They needed a way to help carry around their everyday items like tobacco, medicines. So the netsuke was used as like a toggle that was tucked over the obi sash. And then hanging by a cord from that would be a box or a pouch.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, everyone had a purse or a box thing that they kept their money in, or tobacco or whatever. Since there was no way to sort of hang it off the clothing, they would loop the string under the belt, and then this toggle, this netsuke, would prevent it from slipping out.
Exactly.
And you could pull it out pretty quickly.
It was really nice. Earlier iterations were attached to the sash, but the netsuke really allowed you to take off the item, handle it more easily. It was just a more practical way of using things.
So what you end up with is these little sculptures that fit in your hand. And we're looking at under the section mastery, you've pulled out some of the better ones, the most intricately carved ones, and put them, you know, under bright lights, with magnifying glasses. There is an amazing one here called Men Playing Go Inside a Fruit. And it's a peach with the sides chopped off. And inside there are two little men playing, you know, the kind of checkers of the East. There's another one, and it's a clam shell open. And inside you can see tiny people. They're probably, you know, a few millimeters high. You pointed out one here that's amazing. What's this lion dog?
Yeah, so this is a shishi, or exactly as you said, a lion dog. And it was used as a symbol to ward off evil spirits and bring good luck. And I really love this piece because it has a movable jaw. You can change the expression, the ferocity of the shishi. And it's really uncommon for the netsuke to have movable parts like that, so this is a really special piece in the collection.
Another one like that is the mouse sitting on a barrel. Does anything move in there?
Yeah, if you wiggle the netsuke just a little bit, another mouse pops out of the bottom of the barrel, and it's really tiny, and it took a lot of craftsmanship to be able to create something like this.
So these things are carved, the ones we're looking at here are carved in ivory, which, you know, where were they getting their ivory from? From like sea creatures with tusks?
Great question. So these were mostly made out of elephant ivory or elephant tusks. In the 16 to 1800s, there was an open trade route bringing in ivory internationally.
Mm-hmm. So they needed a very hard, preferably light colored medium. And you could have any kind of imagery, as long as it wasn't the shape wasn't too kind of catching on things with bits sticking out. Most of them are kind of folded in on themselves, I think, so as to not stick out. But that's not quite how they began. How did they begin?
Yeah, so originally people would use found everyday objects, so like an interesting shaped root, piece of wood, a shell, or a beautiful stone. But exactly as you say, over time they became really popular. People were using them to show their fashion sense, their personal style. So they became really elaborately carved, covering a wide variety of themes. And as you mentioned, if they had any sharp or jutting pieces, it was really hard to use it more functionally. So they really married that functionality and fashion.
Mm-hmm. And they did want it catching on silk.
Exactly, yeah. People wore a lot of silk and really fine material. It had to be subdued because there were laws at the time that prevented people from showing opulence. So there became kind of a tradition of really understated but beautifully made fashion accessories for personal mm-hmm. style. So
could you just explain that? And like in the Edo period, 16, 17, 1800s, the country was closed off to the world, and the kind of samurais were the top dogs, and they somehow dictated that lower class people could not wear kind of flashy clothes?
Yeah, exactly. There were rules at the time coming down from the highest class, preventing the lower classes, the townspeople, so the merchants and the artists, from showing their wealth. The aesthetic at the time was very subtle and understated, so people would kind of get around that. There's a little bit of a loophole with something that was technically a practical object, like a netsuke.
In another section under fables and myths, you've got folk tales and heroes. So who are these? These are kind of like licensed characters almost. You know, everyone knows them. And who's this farmer with a large peach?
Yeah, so this is the story of the peach boy, or Momotaro, where a couple who isn't able to have a child finds a peach that turns into their precious little boy, and then grows into a brave warrior. And there are kind of similar stories coming through to modern days. So there's another famous story about a little bamboo boy and a girl who grows out of a seed. So it's interesting to see this going across cultures.
What's the catch? Like, does the kid run away from home? Or there's no downside?
He's the reward for hard work and dedication.
Okay, so there's a happy ending.
Oh, and I should also mention, on that side, they were a lot like kind of Marvel characters today, in a way, where, you know, someone started from humble beginnings and then became like a nationally known hero.
Oh, okay. Under deities and demons, it's a similar thing, but these gods are pagan inserts into Buddhism. The seven figures, so the seven lucky gods, you have one where they appear all huddled in a little rowing boat without any oars, apparently. And then another one where they're in a sack. Who were the seven lucky gods?
Yeah, they were a common theme in netsuke and imagery at the time. They were a popular symbol of good luck and auspiciousness. And I think in the sack, they're actually fighting a demon and have been put in a magical sack and then battle their way out. There's a lot of stories about them from the era. Yeah, I like these pieces because they tell a story just in a carving that's 1 to 2 inches long, but there's a lot of action and character going on just in that small piece.
Mm-hmm. So you have a shoki with an oni, and then you have a shoki with a sword and oni, and that one is like three times as big. What is an oni?
Yeah, an oni is a demon, and demons take many different forms. People would often wear them as their netsuke of choice. It was meant to ward off bad luck and was able to bring you good luck and fortune, even though it was kind of a scary figure.
Mm-hmm. So they're kind of like gargoyles.
Yeah.
Kind of ugly, but they ward off evil.
I like that analogy.
Right. Portable gargoyles.
Yeah.
Under the section people, you have people doing jobs and then sort of characters. One of them is a Dutchman. So you have this sort of Asian-looking Dutchman. He's got bloomers on and kind of a doublet. And he's just kind of standing there with his hands together, but under his feet is a circle. What was special about this netsuke?
Yeah, this was a dual-purpose netsuke. It was a seal that had the personal symbol of the person who was wearing it, so they could use it to sign documents, important legal paperwork. And I really like this one that you pointed out. Like, something you've observed before is that all of the shapes are really exaggerated, all the features are really exaggerated into almost a caricature, and that's definitely true with this Dutchman. People weren't getting a lot of interaction with the outside world. There was actually laws at the time that excluded outside trade and travel, but there was a community of Dutchmen that was kind of sequestered in a small city in Japan at the time.
Even though the country was closed off, there was a tiny amount of trade and coming and going, and I suppose the people would have been, you know, very exotic looking, and if you could carve one, you know, that was a major image. But what you would have seen day to day in the city would be these: a man with a grinding wheel, a woman, she's like got like a giant rolling pin, and she's had a sort of a round thing like a mangle, and she's like bashing a roll of cloth. So she's making it's canuta, she's beating cloth to make it soft and shiny. Behind that you have a guy tying a bale, so like a bale of cotton, I suppose. And then another one is a little fella squatted down with a hammer. He's just hammer and chisel carving. Again, these look caricaturish. The heads are big, the bodies are closed in for the purpose of, you know, being rounded and smooth. And then the darkness, you know, in the inner body, there's a lot of shadow caused, I don't know if that's dirt from the centuries or the way they carved, that they could do black highlights.
Most of that is just aged ivory. We did clean these all very carefully.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sarah Kate Nomura. She's the Assistant Director of Exhibitions at the Portland Japanese Garden, and she's here talking about the art of netsuke carvings. We're now in the animal section, which is, it's kind of a bit more whimsical, I think. My favorite one in the animal section is rat on a dried salmon head. And it is, you know, you'd look at it and think, oh, it's a tiny mouse on a fish, like a shark. But when you realize it's a big rat, and you think, oh my God, the size of that salmon is just incredible. And it has ivory, it's ivory with inlaid eyes. So I think that's mother of pearl fish eyes, and black dots for the rat. And then the little card says, when depicted with food, rats represent abundance, wealth, and a good harvest.
That's also one of my favorite netsuke in the collection. I'm the year of the rat, so it has special meaning for me. People would often wear the netsuke that symbolized the animal, their zodiac animal. You know, they would either carry that animal year-round to show the traits of their zodiac animal. So for me, it's associated with abundance and good harvest. Or at the beginning of a new year to really kind of channel the good things that were happening that year.
Mm-hmm. They weren't afraid of, you know, dark imagery. There's a wonderful wolf with a skull, and it looks like a wolf out of The Simpsons. You know, it's got like a humpback and a hollowed eyes and a tiny ears, and he's leaning forward over a giant human skull.
So a lot of, there are a surprising number of netsuke that show kind of scary or exaggerated, like terrifying, I don't know, dangerous creatures. And this netsuke, we think that because the wolves were scavengers and would even sometimes harm people, eat people, carrying one around your waist showed that you're repelling that kind of energy, those kinds of bad images from your body.
Mm-hmm. Three birds resting on a basket. The basket is just amazing. Tell us what this sort of honeycomb surface is that they're sitting on.
Yeah, inside of the basket are many tiny, like slightly larger than a grain of rice eggs. And when you move the basket, I was lucky enough to be able to handle this piece as we were setting up the exhibit, it rattles just a little bit, and they were somehow carved inside of this larger sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
So a really special piece. Yeah, people would use netsuke as a subtle way to show their wealth. And so if you got a really detailed netsuke, it was kind of showing off the resources that you had available. But also the carvers got really competitive with each other. There became a huge market for the netsuke. So carvers were competing to create the most detailed and beautiful and challenging pieces of art.
I love the idea that it was like showing off your star sign. I mean, that's so corny. It's amazing. I like this one though. Snail and chrysanthemum on a mushroom. You've displayed them with these little mirrors so you get to see the underside. And it's just a fantastic flat mushroom, no stalk, and you can see the gills on the bottom in a different color, you know, dark. There are holes that go right through. And then sitting on top of the mushroom is you've got a snail kind of flattened out, and then these chrysanthemum buds. And, you know, I don't know what it means, but somebody was really into mushrooms.
I really love this one also. It's like a secret. The more, if you flip it on one side, it looks like a real mushroom, and then on the other side is this little scene. And it sounds like chrysanthemum symbolized longevity and perseverance, but I am curious to know more about mushrooms in Japan, at Okura Japan.
And then this other one, skull and snake. This is a 19th century one, so from the end of the era. Did they ever stop making these, like, in terms of popular culture?
Yeah, so they aren't used as a practical object in Japan. They really turned into a collector's item. They're really now have evolved into works of art in their own right instead of something that people will wear. You'll find them in auction houses around the world. There are active carvers also around the world today. But I would really say they had their heyday in maybe the mid-1800s.
This one is 19th century, so that's 1800s. And it's wooden. It's a skull with the lower jaw missing, so the teeth are sticking out. And it kind of looks like a diver's helmet. It's that kind of a skull. And there's a snake crawling in one eye socket and out the other. And it's just like the kind of ring you'd wear if you were in a heavy metal band.
I even see Darth Vader in it now that I'm looking at it together with you. It shows death, it shows fear, and when you're wearing that, you're repelling those things. Death won't come near you if you have this little talisman. It also, because the snake is running through it, we tell the little bit of a story about people born in the year of the snake. They're supposed to be intuitive, wise, and often introverted as well.
Oh, okay. Like all of us. Rat, puppies, monkey on a tree stump. But these are kind of the cute ones, right?
It's true.
These are just like, you know, Disney animals. Although you did point out that the monkey looks like a chimpanzee, and like, where are they getting chimpanzees in Japan in those days?
Yeah, I'm so curious about that story. Like, they were clearly importing ivory from the African continent, but these are done so with such a detail, so much accuracy in three dimension. I feel like they must have either had some really great reference images from woodblock prints, or perhaps even seen the monkey in person. A lot of times there would be recurring three themes throughout two-dimensional art and the netsuke. So there are some examples of netsuke that are the same composition as a printed work.
Yeah.
Many of the stories that these represent have been around for hundreds of years, and they really became immortalized here in these netsuke, but it was kind of an ongoing conversation that was happening in Japan, in culture at the time.
The final section is called Shishi and Kamainu, and Shishi's a lion, Kamainu's a dog. Just tell us where this mythical animal came from.
Yeah, so these were a mythological lion dog, and people would the symbol often came up during the new year. There's the lion dance where people wear a shishi mask and scare away bad fortune to bring in the new year, to start the new year off on a good foot. And this collection shows Netsuke in, or sorry, Shishi in different poses. Something that I really think is like a fun insider story is that if the Shishi is holding a ball, that means that it's a male, and it also means that its powerful energy is being temporarily channeled to this ball, so it's safe to interact with it and engage with it.
And then there are the Shishis. If it's a girl, then it's got a pup. That's right?
Exactly.
And this, was this a Korean idea, the dog lion?
Yeah, the Komainu symbolism is a Shishi that's more dog-like. It has its mouth closed, and those originated in Korea. And the Shishi, so more lion side of the lion dog, came from China. And yeah, so we're lucky enough to have two Shishi here in the garden. They're larger sculptures that are at the Krumpapaker Family Bamboo Alley, which is a pathway that leads through a gate to the pavilion here where we are today.
The Japanese garden always has art programming planned out at least a year ahead. And now that we're back from the pandemic restrictions, just give us a quick sense of what's coming up in the next year.
Thank you. Yeah, we have a really impressive lineup coming through the year. So the Netsuke exhibit is open through April 17th. We also have an exhibit in the Tanabe Gallery called The Art of Vitality, the Peter Schimbach Bamboo Art Collection. So those are really delicately and expertly crafted bamboo baskets and bamboo sculptures. Also right now we have an exhibit up on Hina Matsuri, or Dolls Day. So there's a little display of the dolls that are meant to bring good fortune for girls coming through the year. That closes on March 7th. Our next exhibit opens on May 14th and it runs through July 4th. It's called Gifts from Japan, a Horticultural Tale Told Through Botanical Art. So we're partnering with the Huntington Library down in California to show a collection of botanical art prints and drawings that really represents, it's almost like a botanical calendar to show it's blooming throughout the year. And we also tell the story about some of the first Japanese Americans to be engaged with agriculture and that history here in Oregon. And then opening on October 1st is Garden of Resonance, the Art of Jun Kaneko. He is an internationally acclaimed 3D artist, sculptor. He has kind of larger than life scale works that are going to be displayed throughout the garden. And he'll be creating pieces just for the garden, for this show.
What was the name? Jun Kaneko?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Jun Kaneko. He's based in Omaha, Nebraska, and he's a Japanese American artist who we're very lucky to have a partnership with.
What kind of work does he do? What medium, and who is he like?
Yeah, so he works in a variety of medium, often metal, sometimes ceramic and glass. He's really kind of iconically known for his huge faces that have whimsical patterns on them. There'll be faces kind of looking towards each other, having a conversation. We also have cultural events going on throughout the week here in the garden. So I think just yesterday there was a tea ceremony. We have dancing, traditional music. There's usually something going on in the garden, and we also celebrate some of the big Japanese holidays, and right now it's Dolls Day, but throughout the year we have special events to help celebrate Japanese culture.
So the Portland Japanese Garden is kind of back. We didn't know for a long time whether you were open or how restricted you were. You back 100%, you know, vaccinated and masks?
Yeah, we're back to business. All of our staff are fully vaccinated. Currently, we're requiring masks indoors, but keep an eye on our website for any changes there. We're open from 8 to 10 and then for members, and then 10 to 3:30 p.m. for members and the public. From Wednesday through Monday, closed on Tuesdays. Open for business and really excited to have visitors come and stay with us.
Great. My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Sarah Kate Nomura. She's the Assistant Director of Exhibitions at the Portland Japanese Garden. She was talking about fashion and fantasy, the art of Netsuke carvings, which was curated by Emma Hutman and Aki Nakanishi. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus with masks on, but in person.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure meeting you. And I just, you let me see the garden or the exhibit in like a deeper way. You had such insightful questions. So really a pleasure.
Thanks very much.
Estás escuchando KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy, martes 29 de marzo del 2022. En medio de la pandemia, los negociadores de Ucrania y Rusia han abierto sus primeras conversaciones de paz directas en más de dos semanas. Antes de las negociaciones de hoy en Estambul, Turquía, el presidente Volodymyr Zelensky dijo que Ucrania no estaba dispuesta a comprometer su soberanía e integridad territorial, pero que estaba abierta a discutir la neutralidad y la prohibición de que Ucrania se uniera a la organización del Tratado del Atlántico Norte, más conocida como OTAN. El lunes, The Wall Street Journal y el sitio de noticias de investigación